This call is being recorded.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Municipal Sustainability and Energy Forum. I'm Sierra Dahl, and I'll be your host today. And we have a presentation this morning talking about CCA out in California. And Samuel Golding will be the person starting it out, and followed by Jerry Braun and Matthew Marshall. So go ahead, Samuel.
Thanks, Sierra. Okay, so for those of you that don't know, California is currently undergoing a large-scale transition to community choice, with about half of the utilities load in the next 3 years forecasted to depart to these programs. And simultaneously, the state as a whole has to continue to advance renewable portfolio standard and distributed energy goals. And so all of these regulations and market structures have to be fixed and modified in various ways, because there are a variety of gray areas and potential problems that are becoming apparent in our regulations and law because of this transition. So particularly around bonding requirements and above market stranded cost allocation, particularly from the utilities' existing contracts of renewable resources, but also some of their legacy utility-owned generation. And then open questions on how do we coordinate integrated resource planning so that we can optimize investments in renewable integration? How do we ensure that long-term contracting continues apace even when the counterparties are changing from the IOUs to the CCAs? Concerns over capitalization and then, you know, reliability and so on. And so we have recently, over the last couple of months, had a number of high-level forums that have revealed a lot of insight into how people are thinking about this coming transition. So those would be the CPUC on-bank hearings. These are all-day hearings that draw hundreds of experts from around the state to discuss these issues. They had a CCA on-bank hearing in February, a retail choice on-bank hearing last week, which was also with the CEC. And we also had a CCA symposium, an annual conference earlier this month, at which CPUC President Michael Picker and Jeff Cypress got into a very interesting debate. So we're going to collectively discuss our impressions of those forums and kind of the direction that California is heading in, some of the main issues. And for me, I'll just start this off. It really boils down to state oversight versus local control and self-determination. That's at the heart of a lot of these debates taking place. What is the proper role for the state in overseeing community choice programs? Is the CPUC the appropriate regulatory authority to help coordinate the activities of CCA programs and kind of align them with what's going on and with the utilities or not? And this kind of plays out all over the place. For example, in the integrated resources plan proceeding, the CPUC started off saying that they had a lot of authority over CCAs. CCAs said there's no statutory basis for real oversight, but they'll voluntarily coordinate with the CPUC and the CEC. That produced a legislative initiative this year, SB 618. And under the proposed legislation, the CPUC would expand CPUC oversight of CCA integrated resource planning. And that there was a big struggle over that, and now the language has been toned down in the most recent version to say that just kind of generically all load-serving entities will coordinate to optimize their investment decisions. It's also apparent in the sudden reopening of the CCA bond issue in rulemaking 03-10003. The IOUs are advancing an argument that the bond that CCAs are required to post before they launch should be very large, much larger than the current kind of $100,000 bond. They're arguing that the bond should be set so that if a CCA just fails really suddenly and all its customers are returned to the utility, the bond would cover the estimated energy procurement cost above market. So this could be, you know, tens of millions of dollars, maybe hundreds of millions of dollars. They've previously argued this and been rejected, but this is, again, another indication of how this is heating up, that it's been reopened. The big elephant in the room, I think everyone will agree with me, is that the utilities are arguing their contracts for renewable resources in particular, and some of their legacy generation, are currently, they're not being compensated for the above market costs of those resources when CCAs launch and take away part of their customer base. So we have a mechanism in place right now. It's called the PCIA, the Power Charge and Difference Adjustment Mechanism, that's supposed to make the utilities whole for those above market costs. But the utilities are saying it undervalues it, and so they've advanced an alternative proposal. And this proposal is very interesting. It would allocate all of the renewable and capacity benefits of these contracts eligible for cost recovery directly to CCAs proportionally. So for example, if the IOU is at a 40% RPS when a CCA launches in future, the CCA would actually start off with a 40% renewable power supply. Its customers would then be charged the difference between the contract prices and what the power is sold for on the market. And so that would be a fairly large differential, probably, you know, $50 a megawatt hour or higher. So that's my takeaway. It's a very interesting time, and I'd love to hear Jerry and Matthew weigh in on all this.
Yeah, this is Jerry. Sam, that was a really excellent, excellent and concise overview. Certainly everything you covered is right on the top of the priority list in terms of the policy work that's going on in California. I think. Just reflecting on a couple of things that you mentioned, the events that have occurred, the CCA ombak, conference, where the debate occurred between the CCA representative and the PUC representative, and Friday's ombak on retail choice, which is kind of a way of capturing everything that's going on without appearing to panic about the community choice emergence as a major disruptor, which is really what's happening. And we can get into some of those things. I think I'll just limit my comments to a couple of observations that might be worth discussing here this morning. One is that what I came away from the debate a debate between Jeff Cyphers and Michael Picker. I think the key issue that is trust. And I think you alluded to it in terms of, you know, do we want to look to local control, which CCA provides, as, you know, as a source of public, you know, of trust in getting it right, you know, this transition that's happening, or do we look to the state, which, you know, in a way has a mixed record on trust in California in terms of some of the things that have gone wrong. A lot has gone right, and that was my takeaway from the Friday en banc, was that we were really listening to the electricity ecosystem of California talking about all the things that have gone right, including, you know, the implementation of the RPS and so forth, without really mentioning some of the things that didn't go right, including the fact that we've already had a couple decades ago something very much like they were talking about Friday. It was called a competitive transition, and basically the deal was cut between the state and the regulated utilities that, you know, they would open up and they would continue to operate, but with generation being procured competitively, and the utilities not allowed to participate in that market. And the catastrophe that resulted from the market design was basically a crisis, and ultimately the bankruptcy and near bankruptcy of a couple of the major utilities. And more recently, you know, in a way that affects local jurisdictions and certainly the politics, there have been some, you know, breaches of trust in terms of just operation of the local infrastructure that, you know, that happened in a way as an outcome of some of the financial stringencies that resulted from the electricity crisis. So I guess my view is that two things. Number one, that the community choice movement needs to do a better job explaining why that, in fact, local jurisdictions really do have the competency and the track record of, you know, of providing trustworthy regulation of utility service. And sometimes we have to think about, you know, municipal utilities. Those, of course, were not mentioned at all in the discussion. And they're working quite well in California. And also other utilities that are provided locally that are regulated locally, and the regulation is very sophisticated and very effective. And so I think that's one issue that we need to be aware of in California. It's going to be an issue everywhere. And then this question of the ecosystem. I think what we need to, you know, be aware of is that, you know, on Friday what we had was, you know, the entire food chain, the existing food chain, was basically talking to each other and talking about an invasive species, which is community choice. And I think we need to work on recognizing that, yes, the ecosystem is going to have to adjust. It's still going to be an ecosystem. It's just going to have some new species involved, and they're going to certainly change things. And the ecosystem will adjust. It doesn't need to be regulated in a way to, you know, to kill off the invasive species, so to speak, but rather to recognize that, you know, that they're part of a stronger future ecosystem. So that would be my comment.
Great. Thank you, Jerry. And let me just kind of summarize what happened between Jeff and Michael Picker before we bring Matthew in, because it's very relevant to what Matthew's doing, actually. So Jeff Cyphers is the CEO of Sonoma Clean Power. Michael Picker is the president of the CPUC. And they're kind of both similar. They're kind of technocrats in their mannerisms and in their perspectives. So it was a really great debate, kind of two sides of the same coin facing off. And they're both fairly political, but all of that dropped away. And they really just started to have an honest debate over these critical issues. It was absolutely riveting. My takeaway was that Jeff observed all of these regulatory and legislative attacks on CCA, and he threw the gauntlet down with Picker, and he said to him, "The problem is that you think CCAs aren't sophisticated enough in their operations or their planning, and maybe that was true, but it isn't today. And if you list all of your concerns, I will commit to responding to each one of them in detail." Jeff also challenged Picker that government was actually the real quote unquote provider of last resort, not the utilities. Provider of last resort should be redesigned around community choice, and that CCA should potentially gain non-bypassable charge cost recovery authorities for their investments and contracts, their long-term investments and future reliability contracts, in a manner like the utilities enjoy. And that was kind of the first time all of those like real practical critical policy and business process issues came to light in public. I submitted a CPUC filing last February that kind of highlighted them. But other than that, it's always been this kind of political no man's land. And Jeff threw open the window at the highest level to reframe the debate around CCA at this pivotal moment. So for me, my takeaway from that was the CCA industry has to now deliver on those promises. We have to clarify best practices, clarify program design. We have to kind of match the utilities' capabilities in energy market operations and in long-term planning. We have to coordinate internally amongst our programs to optimize resource planning and contracting. And the manner in which I think the industry can most quickly do that is by increasingly hiring portfolio managers, companies that provide a full suite of energy risk management services, from long-term planning and short-term planning and analytics through contract origination, contract management to, you know, manage a diverse portfolio of contracts, real day ahead and real-time energy market operations and settlements. CCAs, by and large, have not employed those services, but this is the year that that's changing, and Matthew is actually a really big part of that. His CCA that launched earlier in the month hired the Energy Authority, TEA, and they are a portfolio manager that's owned by a variety of municipal utilities in the Pacific Northwest. Similarly, Silicon Valley launched with a portfolio manager, ZGlobal, and Marin Energy Authority is also upgrading to ZGlobal services this year. And so it's kind of the perfect timing, because those contracting and business processes that those CCAs are pioneering are what Jeff is talking about when he says CCAs are sophisticated enough today. So Matthew, take it away.
To just follow on that and some of the previous comments, you know, I think Jerry hit the nail on the head for us when we were kind of rolling out, and we said, well, okay, if we're going to do this, you know, what are examples to look to? And obviously, you know, Marin and Sonoma were kind of the first out of the gate, and so certainly we looked at, you know, what they had done. But, you know, kind of looking beyond that, in that sort of like, okay, what's sort of the long term, you know, since, to be fair, you know, they hadn't had a long track record just because it's a new thing here in California. And so we really looked at, well, how do municipal utilities do this? And, you know, there's a proven model of successful local government, services being provided over the long term. And, you know, with the thinking that, well, they probably, you know, they've been at this for a while, so they probably figured out some best practices. And, you know, not just looking at community choice best practices, but just looking at municipal utility best practices. And that's really kind of how we ended up, you know, making the decision to go with an entity that had that kind of a long-term track record and capacity from providing service to municipal utilities. You know, it's a little bit of a different game, so to speak, in that, you know, municipal utilities have captive customers. So there isn't this whole, you know, PCIA or PAM exit fee kind of bogey that you have to manage around, and you know, there's not the threat of folks opting out. You know, so it is. It's definitely a different from a, you know, your procurement strategies might be different than they would be for municipal utilities, certainly, but the technical capabilities to be able to implement whatever that strategy is, I think there's a lot of benefit from kind of copying the model of municipal utilities. And, you know, on the kind of the broader debate going on right now, I mean, I think that the two key points that, you know, or maybe sort of two key issues that seem to be at the heart of a lot of it are, you know, really fundamentally the nature of, do you want to have, you know, centralized control, or do you have more kind of distributed implementation of state policy? You know, and so, you know, there's state rules that whether you're, you know, a municipal utility or investor-owned utility or CCA, you have to meet, you know, the renewable portfolio standard and, you know, resource adequacy requirements and things like that. And, you know, for municipal utilities, they go off and you know, figure out how to meet those requirements. And I think, you know, on the CPUC investor and utility side, there's been sort of the added layer of kind of using it as a policy kind of backdoor, I would say, and I don't necessarily mean that in a positive or a negative way, but, you know, for example, when the gas public purpose program legislation was ending and, you know, there wasn't kind of the Sacramento political will to, you know, to extend that, they just said, well, let's just do it through the CPUC, and they've got the authority, so we'll just, you know, we'll replace that with something that's, you know, on the regulatory side. And you know, you'll see that in other realms where instead of, you know, creating a tax or something to provide funding to, you know, deal with, you know, dead trees in high hazard zones due to the drought and tree mortality, they'll say, well, let's just have the CPUC make the investor and utilities do it, and then the investor and utilities pass that on to ratepayers. And so it's kind of a convenient way to, you know, sort of sidestep building kind of political consensus and be able to do things through the CPUC's regulatory authority. And so I think there's sort of a threat to that by having the investor and utilities have less of a, you know, a central role, and, you know, having other entities that basically the CPUC can't, you know, directly tell them what to do. And I think that really comes to that fundamental question of, is it, you know, is it more effective to meet your big picture goals, you know, renewable portfolio standards, greenhouse gas reductions, you know, is a centralized, you know, command and control model going to be the best way to do that? Or is it going to be more effective to say, hey, here's the goal, and let's let individual communities customize their solutions? Maybe I'm biased because I'm from local government, but I think, you know, the answer, in my opinion, is you're going to get better and more diverse and potentially more robust solutions by letting that kind of be locally customized, you know, and I think there's other models in the transportation sector of how some transportation funding gets rolled out, and you know, the state isn't deciding where every roundabout goes. They leave that to local communities to implement what makes the most sense, you know, when you're actually on the ground. And I guess the other issue is the PCIA and or, you know, PAM proposal, which is basically, you know, it's dealing with the legacy of that command and control setup where, you know, for the most part, the storyline is, well, the CPUC told utilities they had to do, you know, these long-term renewable contracts, which at the time were, you know, expensive. And so now there's a legacy of one of those command and control kind of decisions that, you know, has costs that need to be dealt with in the current realm when those, you know, procurement decisions are no longer really competitive with what the market's doing these days. And, you know, I don't think anyone's debating that, you know, there's definite real costs there. I think there's some question about, you know, what the magnitude of those costs really should be or how you actually value that, you know, and so one of the concerns with like the utility's new proposal is that it's basically valuing long-term contracts at spot market prices. And it's like, well, that doesn't really capture any sort of hedging value, and it's kind of a crude mechanism. And then the other big question is, you know, is there any incentive or mechanism to ensure that, you know, the actual value of those, you know, assets are being maximized? And, you know, if you're a utility in the position to say, well, you know, we're not going to lose money either way, we're just going to cost indifferent, so that doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to, you know, exercise every option and make sure that you're actually getting that the full value out of those contracts. And so, you know, I think one of the things that's come up is, you know, maybe having some third-party entity be responsible for saying, okay, we've got these legacy contracts, how do you actually, you know, get them, you know, sell them off and maximize their actual price, not just kind of, you know, pass it on through and use the market price as a reference. And so I think there's definitely going to be quite a bit of debate and I think back and forth of really how to kind of dial that in, because I think everyone agrees that it's not quite as it should be right now, but I think the solution to correcting it is not a consensus yet.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's open this up to a few other questions. We have a few people on board here I'd like to acknowledge. Baird Brown from Drinker, Biddle, and Reese. He's an attorney on the East Coast, very seriously involved with energy law. And Cleaner Rob, same thing. She's in Virginia. Christian and Barton, LLP. She's also an attorney. Judy Schweitzer with Judy Schweitzer and Associates, California. We have Larissa Dobryansky, I believe is we would pronounce it. And I don't know if you want to be associated with General Microgrids or not, but anyhow, that's one of her endeavors there, and she's a new member. We have Michelle Halsell from Pennsylvania State University, and Ron Kamen, also a new member from Earthkind Energy. So let's open this up to questions you can ask each other or anybody else who's in the group here. Just go ahead and dive in and see where it goes. Somebody.
Well, hi, this is Ron Kamen. Oh. Someone else go? Sorry.
Yeah. Ron, is that you?
Yep.
Okay, go
so
ahead.
I guess one of my questions is, so if you don't accept the pulling over the 40% that's in the of renewables or whatever the percentage winds up being from the utility, how do you deal with the renewables issue and meeting the standard and everything like that if you're not accepting the extra charges associated with it?
So I don't think that is kind of being considered as an option. Nobody is saying, you know, CCA shouldn't be responsible for or associated with these legacy contracts. As Matthew is saying, the debate is really around how to value them, how to calculate the indifference, and how to allocate benefits and costs equitably between CCA customers and bundled service customers. And there's, I mean, that could be a call in and of itself with all the technical issues in play. At a high level, one interesting consequence of this uncertainty, it's a bit schizophrenic that everybody wants CCAs to engage in more and more long-term contracting. But at the same time, CCAs, the smart thing to do is to maintain a shorter-term portfolio that can be more flexibly adapted in future after these regulations are finalized. Because in essence, what we have to do as CCA programs is build portfolios and manage price risk and exposure around the contracts that the utilities have already entered into. And then we have a free hand for the kind of portion of the power supply we need above those percentages. So it's like the business reality conflicts with the policy goals in a pretty big way.
Well, and you know, the issue of kind of double procuring is definitely a real one. And I think, you know, that was part of the goal of, you know, this PAM proposal, which is to say that, you know, if, you know, the utilities got these long-term contracts that are, you know, on other folks' behalf, and then, you know, we're right now required to obviously pay the above market piece of that, you know, but we're not getting any, you know, attributes of those contracts. And so we go out and we buy renewables from somebody else. And so, you know, one of the kind of criticisms has been, you know, or at least kind of a head scratching thing of, you know, if the utilities have all these old contracts, that there hasn't been any indication that they're trying to, you know, maximize the value of that. And, you know, one of those is, you know, nobody's seen an investor and utility respond to any of the RFPs from, you know, community choice programs. And so, you know, they haven't tried to sell any of that power actually to community choice programs. They've just, you know, been passing on the exit fees. And so I think there's some question of, okay, how do you actually, you know, extract the most value out of those and then, you know, eventually get it out of the system where, you know, you're not having, you know, twice as much renewable procurement as you need because we're required to go do it. And then the utilities are saying, well, they need to be, you know, hold on to these older contracts. And so there is a bit of a question, and it's not just on the renewable side too, as far as, you know, if the utilities are sort of clinging on to, you know, older, you know, whether it's resource adequacy or renewables, you know, sort of the provider of last resort portfolio and keeping that in place and not really offloading it, but just, you know, kind of passing it out through the market. That's, you know, not the best solution, I think, in the long run.
One of the things that I think these debates and policy level, state policy level discussions seem to be overlooking, in as far as renewables are concerned, is to differentiate between local renewables and local other energy resources, and the large scale deployments that the utilities have been doing through their procurement process. And what I don't see is that the investor-owned utilities in California are going to be or could be effective in deploying local renewables. It almost seems like they are continually for decades throwing up roadblocks to local resources because they're inconvenient, they're hard to manage. And what I think in some sense the debate over, you know, trying to fit CCAs into the current regulatory model, the current business model, is missing the opportunity to develop a complementary capability for managing and procuring local resources that could be extremely valuable. Unfortunately, it hasn't been demonstrated to any great extent by the existing CCAs because, you know, their core business and the revenues they get are for, for the traditional electricity procurement. So I think that issue is something that needs to be on the table. It's not getting much attention.
That's a great point, Jerry. And you know, there is, it tees into some of the strongest common ground that I think the CPC and Michael Picker in particular have with Jeff Cypers and the CCAs. And Matthew touched on this as well. CCAs, through their local government members, have all sorts of authorities that the IOUs and the CPUC can't touch ordinarily. And these are land use authorities, transportation planning, building codes, zoning, emergency planning, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. All of those are critical for distributed energy resources and facilitating and coordinating the acceleration of those resources around policy goals. So CCAs are, in many ways, kind of a unique opportunity to align those authorities and those initiatives at the local level around the state with coordinated planning throughout the state at the load serving entity and wholesale level. That is tremendously exciting. And CCAs have, in fact, started to engage those authorities in that manner. Michael Picker is very interested in that because he does not view policy goals as centered around the RPS. He views the RPS as a tool to lower greenhouse gas reductions, which is the ultimate goal for the state. And if you view all of our actions through that lens, then transportation, electrification, and end-use fuel shifting from, you know, appliances that burn natural gas to electricity appliances powered by clean power are critical, and CCAs can really help.
Well said.
And, you know, one of the things that Picker said was, you know, nobody has a plan for those things. And, you know, I think Jeff's comment, and I would echo it, is, well, yes, we do. Just because you don't know we have a plan doesn't mean that it doesn't exist. And, you know, that's something that has been central to kind of our strategy since before we even decided on community choice as a vehicle to move it forward was, you know, looking at vehicle, you know, fuel switching and electrification you know, natural gas fuel switching. And, you know, so that's a central part of our, you know, efforts. And, you know, we're actively in the electric vehicle charging station, you know, business. And so I think, you know, it's just one of those, you know, I mean, and so maybe we need to do a better job of communicating, hey, local governments are working on all these fronts. And we figured out that it's not just about the renewable portfolio standard, you know, 5 years ago and been working towards that. And so, you know, it's not that there is an action on that front. It's, I think, just not at a point where it intersects with the CPC.
Right.
Well, you know, one of the things that I see is that you know, you've got small organizations that are building capacity, and what I see is the need for, you know, to be able to walk and chew gum at the same time. Walking, yes, walking with the CPC and engaging on all the things that state policy wants to do, but also developing close relationships between the CCA and the local member jurisdictions that have these authorities, you know, that Sam was talking about. The real gap there is going to be the local jurisdictions that have no experience or energy management capacity or energy literacy, and trying to collaborate in an effective way in terms of deploying local energy resources. It's not just a conversation; it's a long-term relationship-building thing that needs to start now. And I'm really concerned that the statewide argument, if you will, is a bit of a distraction. Somehow that needs to be solved, but there's also needs to be some attention to, you know, to engaging this these authorities and capacities that Sam talked about.
That's a good point, Jerry.
Beard Brown, one of the questions that got raised was about how to deal with the contracts and the quote-unquote double counting, the legacy renewable contracts. And I'm just curious, it seems like in a Rawlsian perfect procedural justice world, you would, if you're going to be allocated costs of those contracts, you should also be allocated the RPS value of those contracts, and potentially even should have, as someone suggested, an independent manager who extracted the most possible value, including considering selling them off, but certainly managing them. Anybody thinking along those lines?
Yes. Well, so the PAM proposal that the utilities put forward does part of that, in that it would allocate CCAs proportionally the RPS and capacity benefits of the eligible contracts. The utilities would still manage the contracts, and having an independent manager might not work because the utilities actually plan their own portfolios and manage their price exposure around those contracts. And so that's taking that away from them would be fairly challenging and probably suboptimal. They actually maintain a pretty high exposure to short-term and spot market prices. It varies by utility. Southern California has the highest exposure. Their planning exercises and their risk management departments are really quite competent and sophisticated.
I'm surprised to hear you say they maintain high exposure to spot prices after the disaster that was the original meltdown.
Well, yeah, it really started to rise earlier in the decade as the DWR fixed price contracts from the energy crisis started to decline. And, you know, it's a new world. They have some peaking resources themselves. They execute a number of tolling and fuel price contracts. They have demand response. They have storage. Southern California Edison's trading department executes, I think, thousands of short-term trades to target narrow windows of time when they actually do have a lot of exposure. They are pretty good at it. They maintain a value at risk that's pretty tight, and they usually don't need to raise rates to recover that. They just kind of float within that tolerance over the course of the year using their balancing account. And from the CAISO side of the equation, we have a very advanced market monitoring department that's constantly stress testing and simulating what an optimal market would look like versus what's actually occurring, and then they drill down on any behavior that they think is indicative of anything illegal.
Yeah, I guess the world, and I'll turn it over to somebody else, but hasn't happened in California recently, but two winters ago in the entire Northeast, we had consumer prices go through the roof because there wasn't sufficient hedging by all the various. And we have retail choice, so most of those states anyway do. And so, it was the entire market that was under-hedged. Because of cold and gas supplies in this case.
Yeah, we it's a very different environment here. The utilities procurement is heavily regulated, and there's all sorts of review groups and kind of lots of eyes on this. So it's not comparable to the restructured markets out east, where there's a variety of kind of risk-taking and profit-seeking power marketers responsible for a high percentage of the load. So one of, are there any more questions? I have a couple of other pretty interesting observations to throw out there. Okay,
go ahead.
So, okay, the first is a perspective I think that the community choice industry that's involved in these policy discussions doesn't really think about. But the CPUC and legislature actually have to think about. The CCAs in the Bay Area and Humboldt are fairly responsible and progressive, and that's great, but there are also CCA initiatives, particularly in inland regions of Southern California, which are not, in my professional opinion, they're not responsible, and they are certainly not progressive. And so they are trying to launch a version of CCA that looks more like the restructured market version, where a power marketer is brought in to run almost the whole program, and the portfolios are very short-term. And there's no emphasis on building up local staff capacity or the CCA as an agency. And the political debate is very ideological, kind of anti-local control, ironically. If that model of CCA takes root in California, we will have two diametrically opposed versions of community choice, and there's no allowance in the law or regulations for that. So the CPUC is in this position where they're trying to construct regulations that have to apply to an entity which is pretty amorphous when you get down into what's going on in the state. So that really muddies the waters and complicates the CPUC's thinking in a manner that I don't think the current CCAs are really fully anticipating. Jerry, Matthew, do you want to weigh in on that?
You can see that, especially in the, you see that probably in homogeneous situations where the where you have an entirely urban service area or an entirely rural service area, you can see different pressures pulling in different directions. We where we are have kind of a mixed market, consisting of three different jurisdictions that are all, one of which would be vulnerable to the price taking model, if you will, and another would be very enthusiastic about the more progressive model, and another one in between. So when you have that mixed situation, I think there's a good hope for coming out with something that works for everybody. I don't know it's an awkward situation because it's a new industry. It needs to have some sense of best practices, and all you can really hope for is that there be a strong emphasis on best practices and some work to identify what they really are. That's all I could hope for.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the goals of the new California Community Choice Association, to establish basically a CCA trade organization, which, part of that is regulatory, legislative engagement. But I think an equal and potentially more viable piece of that can be establishing those kinds of best practices and sort of a baseline of, hey, this is, you know, what you need to do. And, you know, and I think there is risk associated with someone thinking that it's easier. They can just kind of, you know, sort of, you know, not worry about, you know, the risks and the challenges associated with it. And so hopefully having, you know, an entity and having kind of a concerted effort to make sure that folks that are, you know, looking to start a new program or build something up, you know, aren't kind of just reaching out in the dark and saying, oh, well, that looks like a straightforward thing to do. Let's go forward and, you know, do the simple version instead of something that might be a little bit more daunting. And so I think, you know, it's beholden on the community to make sure that people don't kind of, you know, misstep. I mean, I'm sure somebody's going to mess up at some point, you know, in some way, but, you know, minimizing that and doing everything possible to not have, you know, significant failures, so that, you know, which would be sort of a tarnishment on the whole, you know, momentum right now, because so far everyone's doing pretty good. But, you know, I think, you know, some of that could be, you know, the luck of the draw as far as timing when people work on the rolling programs out. And so I think not kind of resting on our laurels is an important consideration going forward.
That's a really good point. That's the first time I've ever heard anyone frame it in terms of, you know, maybe this could be constrained to, you know, discrete problems. The risk I see is that this model of CCA spreads rapidly throughout the conservative Central Valley region. And so it could actually kind of rapidly become a very big problem and a kind of a schizophrenic break in the market. And one of the problems is that nobody really talks about this. The CPUC doesn't talk about it. I think they're leery to, you know, weigh in politically at the local level ever in any region. And the Cal CCA and the current CCAs also haven't really been paying attention to this. All of the activists that have been, and the kind of community organizers and stakeholders that have built up around the CCA movement, they're not physically in these locations. So we don't really have any leverage, and nobody's talking about it. And so it's just kind of growing as this amorphous, undefined, but potentially critical concern.
Yeah, and I see the potential for, you know, at least we have one community choice program, albeit slowly taking shape in the Central Valley, and I think it's going to be one that strikes the right balance between the, you know, with good governance. We've spent a lot of time on governance, and with you know, with an ability to meet the priorities of different member jurisdictions.
Yeah, you're talking about the Inland Choice JPA CCA.
Well, no, the Uvalle Clean Energy Alliance, which is in Yolo County primarily.
Oh, okay, up north. Yeah, okay, up north. Well, so the Inland Choice CCA is, you know, governments in Riverside and San Bernardino, but the other model is actually forming in those counties. And it's, you know, the county of Riverside is going with that, with the restructured, what you call the price taking model. The county of San Bernardino, I think, might go with the JPA model that's, you know, based off of the dominant CCA model in California. But then other cities have also dropped out of that JPA effort and started to go along this other path. And so that's cities like Rancho Mirage and Rialto. So it's very interesting. It's like the more conservative governments are opting for this simpler model, and it's kind of cannibalizing and complicating the effort to form a very stable regional CCA in the region down there.
And
let me just make one Let me just make one comment here. The last thing I heard was the San Bernardino CCA fell through. Dwayne Baker is one of the members of the group. I was just talking to him about that the other day, unless something new has happened recently.
You're saying Inland Choice fell through?
San Bernardino County. I don't know exactly which one it was, but I know they were trying to do a CCA, and it didn't go through.
Interesting. Well, so that's one government out of quite a number of major cities in the region. So I think the Inland Choice JPA CCA is still on track, but maybe they're losing interest from some of the governments. And San Bernardino County is certainly a major one, so that's unfortunate.
Yeah, they had a vote on that, and they were overwhelmed with the opposition. So, you know,
wow. They
gave all the reasons why they didn't think it should work, and they went over. The opposition did.
I will watch that. Okay.
Yeah.
That's
I know Dwayne, and he'll be a part of this conversation too at some point. He's a really busy guy, but he he's working on alternatives right now with what he can do in the areas of renewables with a council of government structure. So.
Right. Okay. The last point I think I'd like to make, and this kind of brings it back to something a little bit more directly topical, the reopening of DA, Direct Access Retail Customer Choice, in California. My view on this was that Picker really made this debate happen. No one was really talking about it until he gave it a voice. And then it became, you know, everyone was focusing on it as maybe this will happen. He initially advanced very DER-centric reasons for why the debate should take place, but he never really explained the connection between opening retail choice and accelerating DER in line with state goals. Similarly, the OnBank last week didn't really focus on distributed energy so much, even though that was the original reason for it. Instead, it really focused on the cost allocation and PCIA and PAM and retail direct access. And Direct Energy made a pretty interesting proposal where maybe direct access should only be reopened in CCA territories only. And then somehow power marketers would coordinate with CCAs. So my strategic takeaway from this, I think, and I've confirmed this with, you know, some people within the CCA leadership and, surprisingly enough, people within the IOU leadership who are leery of reopening DA, this might actually undermine the ability of CCAs to engage in long-term contracting for new renewables. And I can explain why that is. But at a high level, you know, when CCAs want to build new renewables, project developers are taking the risk. So it's private capital. CCAs can't recover those costs out of rates on a non-bypassable basis. So really, the project developer is looking at the CCA as a creditworthy counterparty going out two decades. And right now, they can do that pretty easily. But if a good portion of the CCA's customer base might leave because DA is reopened to some extent, it really complicates that analysis. And there's just a portion of load that suddenly becomes a question mark. And so it's a portion of long-term contracts that becomes a question mark. And it's hard to analyze because it is an unknown. So even the specter of this happening might drive up risk premiums, convince certain project developers that they shouldn't even contract with CCAs. And the practical end result would be kind of re-centralizing control back at the CPUC and the IOUs over long-term planning and contracting. Because ESPs, the other relevant perspective here is that by and large, ESPs, power marketers, don't like to engage in long-term contracts at all, but especially for new renewables. So they'd prefer the IOUs continue to procure those resources and then just charge customers equitably for it. Jerry, Matthew, you...
Okay, we are actually out of time to be able to end this. I can see this is not going to be the only conversation we'll ever have. So then the next question is, and I'll be approaching you guys to see what you think about how we could break this down to smaller, manageable chunks and have conversations which might end up with some kind of action as a result of them. So anyhow, Thursday we have another conference call, and the conference call is going to be with Evan Hughes and Randy Johnson, I believe that was his name. Randy's not a member, but he's a totally interesting guy from Tennessee who's an expert in biomass, and particularly municipal solid waste. There's a lot of interesting things going on in that area. Evan also is an expert in biomass and anaerobic digestion and some of the newer developments in that area. So I hope everybody can attend that. We'll be sending out, again, reminders on Wednesday to come to the Thursday call. And thanks for everybody to attend, and, you know, great conversation. I'll see you next time then.
Oh, thanks, everyone.
Thanks very much.
Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.